Hi, I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
And we're Book Friends Forever.
We're childhood friends that grew up to be
a children's book editor
and an author and illustrator.
Welcome to Book Friends Forever, the Publicizing Books During a Pandemic episode. Every week, we catch up with each other's lives, talk about what's on our minds, and share with each other what we're grateful for.
And if you enjoy our podcast, please tell a friend about it and check out our website, bookfriendsforever.com. The website will include more detailed show notes as well as links to the episodes.
And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps with discoverability, so thank you everyone who has already rated and reviewed our podcast. So today, Grace and I have a special guest on our podcast, one of my colleagues at Little Brown Books for Young Readers, Sienna Consul. Welcome, Sienna.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be on.
So can you introduce yourself just really briefly, like what your job is to our podcast listeners?
Yes, absolutely. I'm Sienna Consul, and I'm the Associate Director of Publicity at Little Brown Young Readers.
How long have you been there, Sienna?
Oh, great question. I have been there since, in November, it will be 3 years. It was since 2017. The time has flown, and I've really enjoyed it.
Yay. So as we let you know, we always start by catching up on each other's lives. So
I think you should go
who
first.
Wants to start? So, Grace.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Grace always wants me to start.
Alvina, how have you been?
Well, as I mentioned last episode, I was preparing to go to Vermont, and now I am here in Vermont, so if I sound a little different, that is why I am in a closet, right? A different closet right now. So I drove up to Vermont from Brooklyn yesterday, and I had my cat with me, and it's so beautiful up here, and I'm just really grateful to be here, which I will probably also say when I'm during our grateful section. But yeah, and it was really funny because, so I was actually, to be honest, the most worried about my cat because she's old. She's about 17 years old, but she's moved around a lot. I mean, she's lived in 4 or 5 different places. So I had taken her to the vet in advance, and but she was in her carrier, and I was like, the carrier has a little opening at the top where I can kind of reach in and pet her and and you can give her treats and stuff. So I was like, I'd open that top to kind of comfort her because she just hates the carrier and meows all the time. And then I left the top open thinking it would, make her feel better. And then partway through the ride, she squeezed out. You're not supposed to squeeze out that space, but she squeezed out. But actually it was fine because she just sat. And she was pretty content, so it worked out.
And you stopped by. By my
Sienna.
Place too before.
Oh yes.
Away. So.
Yes, we did because I dropped off some books that you had left at my apartment, and yeah, so it was good, and it was exactly
it was
on
so
the way,
funny
so
because,
it was nice.
I realized we didn't take a picture together, but I did take a picture of you and my chicken.
Yes.
Oh, how cute.
I know. I was wearing a mask.
I didn't realize you had chickens,
yes,
Grace. That's really
chickens.
Lovely. Or a chicken.
Six
chickens.
Good. They all keep each other company, I guess.
Well, Grace, then why don't you share
so
how you've been?
How have I been? Let's see. I'm doing better than last week. Last week was a tough week for me. We found out that my daughter's school is going to go full remote, which is really interesting because it looks like all the schools are going fully remote. So it's kind of making decisions easier, I guess, about if we want to look into private school or not private school, because it seems like they're all more equal than they were before. So that's been really interesting. And I got my printer. Like last episode, I was complaining about how much I had to spend for a printer. And it's finally here. And I'm very happy. I haven't used it yet. I just took it out of the box. Like it arrived about 20 minutes before we start recording. But it looks good. And I plugged it in. It looks like it works. So crossing my fingers that it does the job and my life will be on the upswing again.
Yay. Well, that's good. Yeah, that must feel good. Sienna, how have you been this past week?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. And I'm happy for you that you got the new printer, Grace. I've been all right. You know, I got to have some outside time this weekend once the tropical storm cleared and it was nice enough to be out. Got to, you know, safely distance, visit some friends for an outdoor, you know, in the park type of hang, which was nice. I hadn't seen them in a really long time because they live in Astoria, so they're not easy to get to. Uh-huh. But we made it work and we were very safe about it. And then I actually also attended a Zoom bachelorette party. So that was the first of its kind I had been to for some college friends. And that was kind of funny and, you know, more fun than I expected it to be because, you know, you worry sometimes that since we are talking about how events are in the midst of a pandemic, you worry that it won't necessarily capture the same magic as an in-person hangout together, but it really was lovely, and it was nice to get to see some faces and hear some voices that I don't normally hear.
It's so funny, you know, I completely forgot that there was a hurricane this past week, and it was, I mean, a lot of people are still without power, so, I mean, it was really, you know, there was a lot of damage. Yeah. It was really serious.
Well, you weren't too.
Anyway.
Neither you or in Sienna, you weren't too affected by it?
No, I was pretty lucky. I'm in Brooklyn, kind of close to where Alvina is, actually.
Yep.
But I did not leave town, so I didn't get to escape it. But no, it was fine. We didn't lose power. It was just a little windy and noisy. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of like branches down, and then when I went on my run the next day, you know, there are a lot of branches down in Prospect Park, but I think in Brooklyn it was pretty good. I mean, I don't feel like a lot of people lost power in Brooklyn, but definitely New Jersey, Connecticut, Westchester. I think some places I know some places in Manhattan did lose power. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't, knock on wood, I haven't lost power in a really long time. Like, I didn't even lose power during Hurricane Sandy way back then. So it's such a, you know, it's like everything from your food, you know, and also it's in the middle of summer, so it's so hot, so you can't run AC. Oof. It's just...
Yeah, we lost power very briefly, but it came back right away. And we had a lot of sticks and stuff and branches, just like you. But I do remember before, like there was actually a tornado warning the day before. And I remember the biggest stress was like, we were trying to decide whether or not to bring the chickens into the garage, right? Like, should we put them on the garage or leave them in the coop? And we're like, it's gonna be really hard to get them in the garage with all this wind and stuff. We were like, it was such this, but it might save them. So it was such a...
Now I'm like imagining like chickens like swirling around and
I know,
like in
right,
a cartoon
like Wizard
way.
Of Oz style, like in the tornado.
Well, on to the publicizing books during a pandemic. Sienna, do you want to just start us off by giving us a quick background, maybe on your job responsibilities, I guess, pre-pandemic as a publicist?
Sure, absolutely. So pre-pandemic, the job of a publicist is to try and get the books and the authors out for as much media attention as possible, trying to get the book reviewed, trying to get the, you know, author interviewed perhaps, trying to get the book in roundups or lists like best summer reading or, you know, best back to school books or things like that. That part has not changed as much. But another big component of publicity that is the part that has changed a little more is that pre-pandemic, we would send authors on book tours or we would set up local events for them that were in-person events, usually at a bookstore, like a public-facing event at a bookstore. And then depending on the age level that the book is for in kids' books, we would send authors into schools to do school visits where book sales were an attached component of the visit, and then kids would get a chance to learn from these authors and see their presentation and ask questions at the end. So that is something that pre-pandemic I worked a lot on and that most book publicists work on. And certainly, as you can imagine, the environment is very
so how
different
has it,
now.
Can you tell us some of the changes that has happened now?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people, especially as things were happening, a lot of really big, large-scale events had to shut their doors and cancel, and some of them were able to pivot to virtual and some were not. You know, like San Diego Comic-Con, at first it looked like it was straight up canceled, but then they pivoted and created a virtual show that people could still log in and see different panels that were pre-recorded on Zoom, kind of like we're recording this podcast now, but with video. And, you know, so some bigger shows like that figured out how to create some programming and make it virtual as well, so that authors could still get a chance to be featured and, you know, promote their books and hype the books during that event. And now as we're getting into fall, you know, we're planning for the tours that would normally have been in-person tours, we're planning for those to be a series of virtual events that we're aiming to try and make distinct from one another so that, you know, they're special and people can log in from anywhere. So the difference is sort of that they're not beholden to any one geographic region. Whereas in the past, you know, if an author only went to, let's say, Washington, D.C. and Chicago and California, only the people who lived in those cities could go to those events. Now, anyone can log in as long as they know about the time and date of the event ahead of time and have the right computer and technical capabilities.
So how effective do you find these virtual events?
That's a really good question. And I think that's really the question that's on everyone's mind and what made people nervous at first when the pandemic started to change things. But I think it's kind of a hard question to answer, actually, because we're not necessarily getting the same data right after the events that we were able to after a bookstore event or an in-person tour. You know, sometimes the book sales aren't automatically traceable to that event because people can view the event after it's happened in some cases. So I think it's a little bit of a hard question to answer, and I think that it's effective in different ways. They're effective in different ways than what the in-person events were, because they might not have the same immediate gratification of this many people showed up and bought books at this exact event. But I do think that there's more of a discoverability factor than previously with traditional book tours, because the videos can stay up for longer. People who couldn't necessarily make it at that time of the event can go discover it, and people can sometimes share the links afterward with people to spread the word. So in a way, it almost functions as extended publicity for the book. But again, we're not necessarily getting the same information back that we were able to with in-person book tours. It's harder for bookstores to track and let us know exactly where the sales came from and on what day.
One of the things that you said in passing was that you're doing a lot of events and you're going to try to make them each distinctive in their own ways. How do you do that?
That is the challenge. Yeah. I mean, we're experimenting with different ways to, like, if we're sending the author, you know, sending quote unquote, if we're having the author do three events within the same week, which can pull from anywhere, you know, we want to make sure that we're making one event, you know, kind of a special theme so that it's different from the others during that week. And I guess, you know, one example that we're trying to work on, it's not announced yet, so I can't say which author it is, but we are trying to work on events where maybe one of the events is special because it's an in-conversation partner. And then the other event might be more of a special type of event because it's more interactive and involves, you know, question and answer directly in the chat box between the author and the readers, or even perhaps a game aspect of, like, you know, asking a trivia question and perhaps, you know, someone wins and answers right the first time, and so then they get, you know, some sort of promotional item or swag as a prize mailed to them. So we're trying different things and we're trying to come up with different ideas to make these events feel distinct and special. But there's lots of new ideas cropping up every day, even besides the ones that I've been working on. So it'll be interesting to see what else develops.
Well, I came across an article on Electric Literature called "It's Time to Radically Rethink Online Book Events." And the author of the piece, Kate Reed Perry, I guess she had a debut book, an adult book coming out in August. And one of the things she says is, as COVID has become our new normal, book events have started up again in virtual formats. But like every other online substitute we've instituted, family Zoom calls, Instagram birthday wishes, the internet, these internet readings have lacked some of the magic of the human connection. Is there a way to recapture that magic online? So do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. I thought this was a really, I took a look at this article as well, and I thought it was really fascinating, and she had some really good ideas. I think it obviously kind of depends on the comfort level of the author with what they're willing to share from their, from the comfort of their home with their fans. But I did think that one of her ideas, the idea of like an MTV Cribs style presentation where the author shares their workspace with fans and readers and kind of talks about what it's a day in the life is like and reenacts it a little bit, was a really cool idea. And I thought she had some other interesting ones on there, but that's the one that jumped out at me as something that might appeal to fans a lot, because I do think readers really want to get a sense of relatability with authors and thinking like, oh, you know, what's their process and do they get up and work just like me? And I think that's something that could appeal to a lot of people. But, you know, authors will have to decide if they're comfortable with it and if their stage presence kind of accommodates a format like that.
The one that I thought was really interesting was the online book signing, right? And I think if I remember correctly, or maybe I'm embellishing it with my own imagination, but it was kind of like the idea of like you're at a bookstore and the bookseller is next to you, and like, and then, or maybe not the bookseller is next to you, but you have a book, a big pile of books, and then you like, okay, this person, and you talk to this person for like 2 minutes, sign their book, and like, this is your book, you know, and then you hand it to the bookseller and they'll mail it out to you, and then, and so that you get that interaction while they're signing your book, and then you like take a, you take like a, I guess a Zoom screenshot of the two, like you, of the author holding the book, and
right,
you're like, hey,
right. That's
my
super
book.
Interesting.
I thought that was really interesting, and I was like, I wonder how they would, how you could set that up, because I thought that would be really, funny, you know, like I don't know, there's something kind of amusing about that to me, yet charming.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting someone to come up with an idea like that, you know, like that's, that was one of those ideas that I thought people wouldn't necessarily want a facsimile of it, they would just want the real thing. But maybe I'm wrong, you know, like I'm not really sure. I think a lot of people are opening their minds up to different formats. And so
I guess it really depends on who the author is, you know. I think for certain authors, of course, you know, like a, like celebrity authors, for example, maybe that's something that, yeah, people are willing to,
yeah, I mean, it'd be like
wait
you
in
are,
line for
you are 87th right. in line. Like it's kind of like before this whole thing started, I remember I was trying to get tickets. I got tickets for my family to go see the Infinity Room at the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens. And so like you had to go on at a certain time, and like you had to like wait, and like you are number 87 in line to before you can buy your ticket. Now you are number 86, 83. I was like, it could be kind of like that. You're next to get your book signed. I thought that would be funny.
Yeah. Well, and the benefit of that when you're at a computer instead of actually in line at a bookstore is that you can do other things while you're waiting. Mm-hmm. You can move around and you can eat dinner, and you couldn't really do that if you were at an in-person bookstore standing in line. You have to hold your place.
Though I do foresee some very embarrassing, like, oh, I didn't know you were going to come so fast. Didn't know I was going to get, hold on. Let me pull my pants up while I'm in the restroom.
Yeah, I guess, like, never again, you know, can you go to the bathroom while at an author event, I guess. I don't know. Like, while watching an author event. But I do not advise. Do you, you know, so I've been attending a lot of these events, more so than I think I would have, you know, pre-pandemic, you know, because I can, right? I can, you know, and one example that comes into mind is, you know, our Jewel Parker Rhodes went on tour with her daughter, Kelly McWilliams, because Kelly's debut, or not debut, but her YA novel came out during this pandemic, and it's about a pandemic, And, you know, I think I sat in on 3 or 4 of their events, and I was just really, like, they did a good job at making each one, you know, different, even though they touched on a lot of the same themes, and some of the things they talked about were the same, but I thought that was interesting, and I think one advantage is, and we touched on this, is, you know, you're no longer limited by geography, but I don't know, have you guys attended, well, I'm sure Sienna, you have, but like, have you attended a lot of these events, and have you, do you feel like there are any benefits, I guess?
Well, I will start just to say that, yes, since I have been attending so many different types, I do think there are benefits to the fact that they're accessible to so many more people. And like you said, geography is not a factor, so a lot of people can log in. A lot of people who might not have necessarily gotten to hear these authors speak before are getting to do so. And the flip side, it's authors who normally would not have necessarily been able to go on tour because of budgetary reasons or whatever, are able to do many more events and reach more people. So I think those are the main advantages that I've noticed.
Grace, how about you?
I also think that the problem is there's so many now, though, right? And it's almost like there's too many, you know, like it's just like it's almost overload. So like, come to my reading, come to my this. And I wish so many authors well. I wish all authors well. But it's kind of like, I don't want to spend any more time on the computer. You know, like I don't want to. I'd rather I'll just buy your book. I don't want to stare at the screen anymore. You know, so that's a. And I think if I feel that way, I'm thinking, especially in kids' books, there's a lot of parents and that feel that way as well, especially with their kids looking at the screen. So that's why I think it's a challenge.
It is definitely challenging. And I do think that Zoom fatigue is a real thing, that people, like you said, they're on screens all day, so they want a chance to get away from a screen. But I also think that in so many places, so many other modes of entertainment are still closed and not something that people can do. So I think that while there is Zoom fatigue, there is also a sense of like, well, I can't do anything else. so there's more of an opportunity for people to at least be like, well, I'm free tonight. This looks interesting. That's really true. Want to hear what they have to say. But no. But I think you're right though. I think there's both sides to it, and there's a lot.
It's the challenge to make it feel special, right? Because like that's the thing about book events is that like when you went to see the author in person, there was always something special about seeing somebody in person, right? And in capturing that kind of specialness online, I think is kind of a challenge. So I think a lot of authors have like gone out of the box. Like I was just thinking about how Jeff Kinney has like this van now or bus and he's like driving around for his new book. I mean, I think that's very out of the box. It's an interesting
yes,
it's an interesting approach. What do you think of that?
I like it. You know, I think it's super interesting. I think a lot of authors are getting really creative and daring with what they're doing. I think recently with Stephanie Meyer, the whole drive-in idea with Midnight Sun, the idea that, you know, she could be like on a stage and people could drive in and then hear her speak from a distance and then watch the movie is a cool idea. Mm-hmm. I do think that those are really fun, innovative ideas, and I'd like to see more of them start cropping up. And again, it all is dependent on what the authors are comfortable with. So some authors are going to be more comfortable with something like that than others. But I like to see it. I like to see the creativity. I think it definitely creates a novelty for fans that isn't necessarily there with your standard Zoom event.
But do you think the novelty will ever become par for the course? That's what I'm curious about.
Oh, I see. You like the novelty of even a Jeff Kinney style event where he's renting a bus and stuff? I mean, I think for now it's still going to be really exciting to people just because not that many places are doing anything like it. And I think the number of authors who are going to be comfortable with that is still going to be pretty low for a while, just while the numbers are what they are. I think not as many people are going to feel safe taking the risk and traveling like that. Mm-hmm. So it is going to still be a little more novel than the safer alternative of just doing something online from your computer.
That's true. So what do you think authors can do right now to help promote their books effectively? That's the key.
Sure, right. Well, I mean, I think some things have remained the same and some things are going to be different. I do think that, as was always true, maintaining your social media presence and encouraging pre-orders and finding organic, not overly self-promoting sounding ways to remind people about aspects of your book, is as always and as before, going to be really important as you look at your timeline of leading up to the publication of the book, doing Q&As and interviews and things with friends, keeping your author network strong and supporting other authors as well is going to be something that was always true and will be helpful now. But I think that what's changed and one thing that authors might benefit from is creating their own content in a more interesting way. I worked with the author Aaron Reynolds, who is the author of many, many books, picture books and middle grade, but his book with us at Little Brown is The Incredibly Dead Pets of Rex Dexter, and it launched right in April, right after all of the pandemic shut everything down, and he was supposed to go on a school tour and do all of these things that he didn't get to do. But he did get really creative, and he created his own YouTube channel called The Aaron Reynolds Stay at Home Show. And he was very funny in it and had a countdown clock to publication and had these really funny animated videos where he was speaking directly to the viewer and sometimes would do a drawing demo or do some other kind of exercise and show off some of his books in his bookshelf in his workspace. And he was just his typical funny, interactive, engaging, animated self. And I think that if authors want to create a dedicated channel or a dedicated space where people can go and see them give regular updates and feel really personally connected to them, then that's going to be one way, because people are craving that kind of interaction. That'll be something that I think will be helpful to a lot of authors, especially authors that are used to getting to actually directly meet kids at school visits.
I guess what it comes down to is that social media has become even more important. I know, like, even I would say even like a year ago, Alvina and I would say, you know, social media is good, it's not bad if you like it, but if you don't like it, don't worry about it, it's not that important. But almost now I feel like, oh, it is really important.
It's true. Yeah, everything has sort of the impact of it has increased even more, because that's one of the only ways now to get people's attention in a way that wasn't true before.
That's so hard. I think we touched on this a little bit, but do you think anything will change permanently in terms of how books are publicized when or if the world goes back to normal?
It's the wording of that question.
I know.
Is so
normal,
demoralizing.
Quote unquote, but, normal.
But I know exactly what you mean. It's just such a wild thing to wrap your head around when you're thinking about it. And I would say that I do think some things will change permanently, but I think that it'll be something along the lines of when in-person events do open back up again. People who can do those will go back to doing them, but I do think that, like, debut authors and people who aren't really able to travel will still want to do virtual events, and then that will be a different sort of event that some people can do, and it will be supplementing the in-person events. You know, like, not every type of author will want to do the virtual events, but I think some of them who've gotten a taste of it and like it will probably still want to do them, and now that we've seen that they can be arranged, there's nothing stopping them from doing it, really.
Yeah, I was, you know, so Grace and I did the SCBWI, you know, the annual conference, which they rebranded as the Summer Spectacular. And I think what's interesting, because I'm actually on the board of SCBWI now, and we just had our meeting this past week. And, you know, when Grace and I were on, first of all, way more people were watching us than could watch us live, you know, because I think, you know, in person, maybe it'd be 800 to 1,000 people, and we had 2,000-3,000 people. I think they ended up at the end having over 5,000 people register for the conference, and they recorded all the keynotes, and, you know, you had to register in order to access them, but they're, you know, they're on the website for a month. It was really interesting, you know, and, you know, how far it reached. It was also 48 different countries, attendees
wow.
from 48 different countries. And so, and SCBWI is a global, you know, I've done conferences all across the world, including South Africa last year when I was on my sabbatical. But it's just interesting. So they were just talking about how even when things go back to normal, they do think it would be beneficial to the members to have a video component and have a Zoom component or online component, which, you know, I thought was really interesting. So yeah, I can see that happening with book events too. You know, like, you know, some authors have international fans. I guess it might be complicated, I guess, if working with other publishers in other locations, but you know, it's interesting. Yeah. We're in a whole new world.
Are there certain books that you find are easier to market now than others? Like, I was thinking, like are like books that are like cozier more appealing right now, or is it books that are more like I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, like escapist, exciting.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good question. I mean, I do think that the escapism is a very large appeal, but they don't necessarily have to be comforting escapism. Like, it can still be, like, I think true crime and scary books have actually been on an upswing in terms of what I'm seeing people talk a lot about and what they're consuming pop culture wise. So I do think scary books, but just not scary related to COVID, you know, like crime or something that's like so outlandish horror, but it's so not like our situation, has gotten popular. And then again, not to take it too much back to Stephenie Meyer and Midnight Sun, but I think people were really craving like a completely different built world. So the idea of a world that's based on all these vampire norms and rules, and, you know, Holly Black coming out with another book set in the world of fairy coming this November. I think those types of things are going to continue to be really big because people just want to lose themselves in a totally different type of world than the one that we're experiencing right now. And the more detailed those fantasy worlds are built, the better, like the more it's kind of absorbing people and really taking their mind off of the stress of what's going on.
I remember Alvin and I had a conversation a couple episodes back about like what's selling and what isn't selling. And I remember Alvin, you said something about like the backlist is selling really well now, if only because you can't get the front list titles out, right? But I also thought like maybe there's a nostalgia element happening, like people like, I want that book I read a long time ago, or they want to read the books that they've read. Is there any interest in like, has there been any thought about kind of marketing backlist during this time?
I think there has actually, and that's a really good point. I do think the nostalgia factor plays a big role in it, and I think we are seeing that even in new you know, like media roundups and things that pop up that are normally things that cover new books. I feel like we're seeing a lot of, you know, old titles that are favorites of people pop up, you know, like The Mysterious Benedict Society, which there is sort of a new hook to that because it is going to be a show on Hulu. But I think that even just the book on its own and other books like that that were popular 10 years ago, those things are definitely recycling and resurfacing, and parents and people who love them are thinking of them again and perhaps drawing attention to, you know, the rest of the series, if it's a series. So yeah, I could see that. I think that's been playing out in terms of certain things that have been getting media attention, even though they're much older, and normally that's not how media works. Media likes to cover what's new and just came out, but, you know, we're seeing a lot of nostalgia in media as well.
Yeah, I think we saw early on that series were really popular, and I think in part it's like maybe parents and teens maybe like just looking for like, how can we occupy our children for a long time? You know, like, let's buy a box set of this 6-book series.
Yes.
And especially like the older books, because you're like, okay, I know that I've read these, they're fine.
All right. Well, that was great, really interesting, and we'll see what happens. It's all uncertain. But now let's end, as we always do, with what we're grateful for. I'll start this week. Grace knows this, but Grace is the co-chair, and I am on the jury of the Society of Illustrators Original Art Show. And we just had kind of our kickoff meeting today, and I've never been on like a jury like this, and so I'm grateful for the honor, and I'm really interested in the process. And so, yeah, I think it'll be interesting. So, Grace, what are you?
I think it should be
for?
Really interesting too, because I'm not the co-chair; I'm the assistant chair.
Oh, okay.
And William Lowe is the chair. And what we realized this year, which is so interesting, is that there's a lot of people who are on the jury who we couldn't have had on the jury before, because you have to meet in person in New York City. But since this year it's all by Zoom, we can have lots of people from all over. Like, we have like Gigi Morales in Mexico and Molly Idol in Arizona. So I think the show is still going to be pretty great. Though, yay. I don't know if we're going to be able to see it in person.
That's so wonderful. Well, I look forward to hearing how it goes. And selfishly, I love hearing that Molly Idol's on there because she's an author I work with.
She's and her work's so beautiful.
It is. Her books are great. I love her mermaid artwork, but I'm also a mermaid obsessive myself, so perhaps I'm biased.
Know this about you.
We like her birds. My family is a big bird family, so she has all like the
flamingos.
She's got the peacock book and the flamingo
book. She does
those
really well too. Yeah, it's really great.
So Sienna, what are you grateful for?
Wow. Well, I'm not grateful for like a new recent development, really, like you both have, but I think I'm just continuously grateful for the people and animal that I'm sheltered with. You know, like, I'm very grateful to be living with my partner and with my adorable cat, Kelly. And I actually have, you know, a friend who's a really good friend since high school who lives only 10 minutes away. And so in this pandemic, it's been really nice to actually have a neighbor that I can see regularly and feel kind of safe and like we're in the same pod together.
Nice.
And yeah, just grateful for everybody's ability to keep connected with each other, and for my friend groups that have really stayed in touch and tried to keep supporting each other through GroupMe, group texts, group Zooms. People have really tried hard to stay connected and make sure we all check in with each other, and I think that's really lovely, and I'm grateful for that.
Cool. It is lovely. Grace, what are you grateful for?
I was trying to think, and then we were talking about nostalgia and all, and book and old books, and then I remembered that that I haven't mentioned on the podcast yet, that my book Dim Sum for Everyone was awarded the Phoenix Book Award. And this is a really cool
award. Congratulations.
Have you heard of it before, the Phoenix Book Award?
I
know. It's been going on for a while, but it's given to a book that's 20 years old that did not receive an award or any big notice at the time it was published.
That's a really lovely idea for an award, actually, because
I love the idea of it.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thanks. The award's given by the Children's Literature Association. So, and they've been giving it for quite a while, so it's kind of cool.
I feel like I want to go back and look to see what other books received the award. So
yeah, and like, what it's kind of surprising to see like what books have won the Phoenix Award, but actually did not win any award like when they were at the time. You're like, what? That didn't win an award? So it's so fun.
I wonder how they discover and how they end up choosing things, like what makes it pop up on the award committee's brain when it doesn't have the benefit of like the new publicity around it. So that's kind of interesting. Like, they must go back and kind of have a process.
20 years old. So they probably just go to, it's probably like going to the Caldecott or Newbery, but like 20 years ago, like, okay, let's get all the books from 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. How cool.
So it's kind of cool. It must be really interesting to see how the world has changed, too, in terms of books.
Thanks for joining us. And thanks to Hachette Book Group, Hachette Audio, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and Alex at Pacey Works Studio for producing and editing this podcast. You can find me at Planet Alvina on Twitter and at Alvina Ling on Instagram. Sienna, where can people find you?
Hi, people can find me on Twitter at AmusingGrace21, or you can find me on Instagram at SiennaTK. That's SiennaTK.
And I'm at Pacey Lynn on both platforms. We love hearing feedback, so keep tagging and messaging us on social media using the hashtag BookFriendsForever, or send us a message via our website, BookFriendsForever.com. You can also see more detailed show notes there.
And if you have any suggestions for future topics to cover, please let us know. And of course, please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it. I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
And I'm Sienna Consul.
Have a great week.
And happy reading!
Bye!
Bye!